patreon.com/thewalkoffpodcast. $4 a month gets you in there.
Baseball, Blue Jays, and more baseball. It's the walk-off with Scott Belford and Adam Mack.
This ball is crushed.
The Die Hard podcast for the casual fan.
And another one. My goodness.
Let's talk Jordan Romano officially out on World Baseball Classic. Not a lot to talk about news-wise for Blue Jays. So we're going to keep this brief. We're going to get to our Danny Jansen interview shortly, but I do want to touch on Jordan Romano and just kind of the shape of the bullpen and everything like that. So if you're good to talk that, we'll talk that. Scott is still away, so I'm joined by Craig Ballard, February 6th episode of The Walk-Off. Here we go. Scott is still away on his holidays, honeymoon, birthday, whatever you want to call it. He's in Africa. I asked Scott his thoughts on the Alek Manoah, Anthony Recker fat shaming thing that was going down. He was a little out of the loop. He said, I'm not sure. I guess where Scott is in Africa has a hard time getting Sportsnet and the MLB network, right? He's as outside the region as it gets. Let's just say. So solution for him, by the way, this is a new ad sponsor for the show. So NordVPN, very courteous of them to reach out to us and help support the show. So you can support the show as well by supporting those who support us. So visit nordvpn.com/walkoff. And we got some bonus offers there. VPN, very helpful in Scott's situation as he can be in Namibia, but his devices can think he's back in Canada. So we can continue to watch Sportsnet and all his baseball content while he travels abroad. I know we have a lot of viewers from Australia and the Netherlands. And it's a pretty cool global Blue Jay fan base. So if you're having a hard time logging into Sportsnet to watch Blue Jays games this year, NordVPN is the answer for you. 11 years of NordVPN. So happy birthday to NordVPN. They're giving out a special birthday present. It's their own birthday and they're giving out the present. How do you like that? So visit nordvpn.com/walkoff. And with every 2-year subscription, they're giving out 3 months up to a full year of free subscription as a birthday gift. So very cool there. Again, nordvpn.com/walkoff. 30-day money-back guarantee. So if you don't like it, cancel it, get your money back. No problem. Thanks to NordVPN for the support there. And again, support us by supporting our sponsors. There you go. All right. Speaking of international, Jordan Romano out on the World Baseball Classic. Thoughts on this? Pulled out. Well, I don't know if he pulled out. He's officially said, I'm not playing for Italy. Well, I'm a little upset he's not playing for Canada. But it is what it is. Do you think this is injury related? Do you think this is he's just focused on the season at hand? What do you think is the reason here?
As odd as it may sound, I think it's geographical as much as anything else. So that to play for Team Italy was going to have to be quite an interruption. And we know not just our athletes, creatures of habit, but closers are a whole different breed altogether, So this was massively going to interrupt because where Team Italy played would have been quite the trip there and back in the middle. Also, I mean, all due respect to Team Italy, if you're Jordan Romano, are you sitting there thinking, are these guys going to be competitive? So in other words, if I went there, would it be like six of one, half dozen of the other if I was in training camp because I'll still be getting my work? Does Team Italy have work for Jordan Romano? Is Team Italy going to be competitive and have safe situations for Jordan Romano? Big picture-wise and geography-wise, I feel like that's more what's in play rather than it being an injury. But I certainly want to echo your sentiments, Adam Eck, and I don't want to start the 2023 season. You know, I already have to warm up to Kevin Kiermaier, so I don't want to start the season, you know, being upset with Jordan Romano. But I echo that. And let's give him the benefit of the doubt. Maybe there's a great reason why he's not pitching for Team Canada. I love the World Baseball Classic, Adam. I absolutely love it. And I love to – Freddie Freeman is good with me for the rest of his life. There's someone who is Canadian because his mom was Canadian. And when Team Canada couldn't get anybody, our own Canadians, to come play for us, he phones up Team Canada and says, guys, you, Like, would that be all right? Like, you guys don't have a spot for me, dude. Like, just incredible. So the World Baseball Classic means something to me, Adam Mack. I'll tell you that right now. And I also wish that Jordan Romano was pitching for Team Canada.
Well, sad he won't. I don't think there's a case of injuries here either. I think, like you said, I think the travel involved, the timing of it, you know, just warming up for the ball season. Like you said, maybe a different story if it was on a real contender with Italy. Like, no offense to Italy. As Canadian baseball fans, we're no one to speak on who's a contender. Right. The World Baseball Classic, I'm well aware. But, you know, maybe if it was playing for Team USA or whatever, it would be a different story, right? When there is that opportunity to maybe get a gold medal or something like that. Yeah, so he's out. I think a little bit of this might be, like, I know I'm going to come across as a Shapiro and Atkins fanboy when I say this, but this, as we sit here on February 6th, looking into spring training, this is the best bullpen I've seen in years.
Totally.
I think this is the, for sure, in Jordan Romano's major league career. And I would say this is the first time he's going into camp. I don't think he's worried about his job, but I think this is probably the first time where there has been a legitimate option other than Jordan Romano to close out games, right? I feel good about Eric Swanson. Chad Green, I know, is injured and he's a ways away. Even if he comes back this year, I'm not expecting the best possible version of him coming back from Tommy John, but I feel good about this bullpen. I'm optimistic. I'm a glass half full guy. How are you feeling about this bullpen?
Couldn't agree with more with what you said more. It's definitely the best bullpen in Jordan Romano's era, so in pretty much the Shatkins era. And that's as is, Adam Mack. You just mentioned at some point Chad Green going to be back, hopefully this season. I know this isn't for the faint of heart, and I know Blue Jay fans are sick of hearing it because for the fourth year in a row, I'm going to say Nate Pearson could contribute. But I do think it's true. Nate Pearson could come in. And like I said, Adam Mack, you're liking this bullpen as is. That's two guys that could be added. And I'm such a Zulueta fan, man. Like, I know we all want Ricky Tiedemann to get up to the big league level, but Zulueta's stuff, to me, he's starting to flirt and mix in a curveball now these days, too. Man, I want Zulueta to be a big-time contributor on the big league level. If Romano were to have some sort of injury, because I do agree with that, I don't think he's worried about losing his job, but what's that'd be the glass half empty. If he gets hurt, he's going to lose his job. I'd rather see the glass half full. If something does happen with Romano, to your point about the bullpen, Anthony Bass, over a period of time, can close games for you. Eric Swanson can help you close games. Yimi Garcia has done that in the past. The flexibility at the back of this bullpen right now is unlike anything that Shapiro and Atkins have had to deal with. And now you've got the Richards, the Simbers. Well, Mazur can be at any time, but really the Richards and the Simbers, you've got those long inning guys ready for the fifth and the sixth inning. So on those games where Kikuchi or White or Berríos does blow up, I'm not even panicked. We've got guys for that spot that we weren't counting on. Oh, no, really needed Simber for that seventh or eighth inning. We've got nothing but guys for that seventh and eighth inning now. Mm-hmm, so even exactly. The Simbers and the Richards get moved up. The great flexibility, point. Wow. And I'll throw Trent Thornton's name in there just because he seems to be the cat that with the 90 lives, it just won't go anywhere. I don't know how he's telling, but anyway, the depth on this bullpen. And Adam, like I said, you're saying you like this bullpen as is. And I'm saying there could even be more coming.
Yeah, I was listening to Blair and Barker last night. This is their podcast from Thursday, and they were talking about the shape of this bullpen, and the two names they kept throwing out was Yosfer Zulueta, and I love that call, and also Hagen Danner. Friend of the show, Hagen Danner. This is a converted catcher. This is a guy who throws high 90s consistently and touches triple digits on the radar gun. Last year, injury plague season, didn't get a lot of work in. He's coming into this spring healthy. I'm very optimistic that there is another high-end bullpen arm in this organization right now. Yep. I think we have a few lottery tickets in AAA. And again, that's a risk coming across as too positive here. But again, that is a situation that we also haven't entered a season feeling good about our AAA depth in quite a while.
Yeah. So I won't even get you to do this, Adam Mack, because we don't know what sort of our viewers watching this on a full stunt. Like, we don't know because it's vomit inducing. But at some point when it is safe for you to do so, simply go back a year from now, jump on the old Google machine and go back a year from now and take a look at what the Toronto Blue Jay bullpen looked like 1 year ago from right now. And now look at, are you kidding? And it's a tough scene, Adam, for the Fire Chatkins crowd. Let's put it that way.
Couldn't agree with you more. I will acknowledge Yankees probably have a better bullpen. Astros probably have a better bullpen.
Yeah.
It is what it is. I would say we have a top five bullpen in the American League. I feel good about that. Need a few things to hit. Hopefully they do. Very positive going into this season. Anything else to add, Craig, before we throw to Danny Jansen?
I would like to see if there is going to be any movement in the bullpen. I'm watching Steve Matz closely. Steven Matz. Oh my gosh, Tim Mesa. I'm not watching Steve Matz closely at all. Let me clarify. I'm not watching him closely at all. Tim Mesa. Now I've got these peepers right on Tim Mesa. It is the sole lefty in the bullpen. I thought that last season, if you took a look just on the surface, it's like Vladimir Guerrero Jr. last season. His numbers, if you look on the surface, 98% of baseball would be like, oh my gosh. Hey, Ma, did you see what I did here? Like, holy crap, writing home material, right? For Tim Mesa last season, it wasn't a bad season by any stretch of the imagination. In my opinion, it just wasn't worthy of Tim Mesa. So I do want to see him take steps forward, because it is true that cupboard is bare. That is one thing about the bullpen. After Tim Mesa, the lefty cupboard is bare. A year ago from now, we hoped it'd be Baruchy. A year previous, we hoped it'd be Anthony Kiel. We had guys that we know are just no longer the option. So if there is somewhere to shore up this bullpen, let's keep an eye on Tim Mesa, especially in this day and age, right, Adam, with these rules, you got to face three guys. So you can't just be good against lefties. You're going to have to face some righties.
Absolutely. Couldn't have said it better myself. Craig, thanks so much for jumping on here and talking Blue Jays with me. We'll be back next Monday. Talk more. Hopefully, there's some real news to talk about.
We are absolutely thrilled to have returning to the show starting catcher for the Toronto Blue Jays, Danny Jansen. Welcome back to the walk-off, man. Thanks so much for taking the time.
You got it. Thanks for having me back.
Hey, we are so pumped to talk some baseball with you. To start with, how's your offseason been? I know you've just brought up the 2.5-month-old son there. You're getting some dadding time in, eh?
Yeah. Yeah, it's been amazing. I mean, that's obviously the highlight, no doubt. His name's Miles. He's awesome. And, I couldn't be more excited for the season. And I know it's winding down. It's about a month or a little less until we're getting going. So it's been a good offseason. It's been a busy one, but I'm excited.
Both you and Miles are away from baseball activities right now.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, he's not doing anything yet, but we'll get him tossing soon. Get him throwing.
Get that arm stretched out. Are you going to raise him to be a lefty? Are you going to force him to be a lefty?
I don't know about forcing. Obviously, it's too early to tell what he's doing, but he's always
just hand that ball to the left hand and you see what happens.
Yeah.
maybe there's a.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, if he's a lefty, he's not going to be a catcher then. You know what I mean? So
that's right.
That's a great point. Ooh. That's a great point.
We'll see how it goes.
Fair enough.
So let's start with, last season, let's start there, right? You had a bit of a breakout season when it comes to the offense side of things, but I kind of want to zoom in a little on a particular time here and pick your brain on what happened between August 20th and August 25th. Cause you had kind of a rough day at the plate against Garrett Cole. I think it was August 20th. And then you had like 4 days off and you came back and literally had one of the best final months in all of baseball. I mean, honestly, Danny, had Bo Bichette not been a teammate, I think that everyone would have been talking about it a lot more. Of course, Bo had like the best September baseball. Did you change something? Like, was it a swing approach that you changed or a philosophical? What happened there?
Probably philosophical mostly. You know, obviously, you know, baseball is, you know, between the years, a lot of it. There's a time like you said, that stretch there where you know, I wasn't in the lineup and stuff, and you know what, I mean, I'm ready for when my name's called. So there's, you know, obviously I've never been afraid to tweak things offensively. I've had this roller coaster of a career so far. I feel like where I'm just finding myself, and it's taken me some time for sure through struggle, but I've always looked at that struggle as, you know, a way to improve, right? So I think that, you know, philosophical approach where it's like, all right, I'm in there again, and it's like, you know, here we go, almost like screw it, right? Like I'm gonna compete. I've always competed, but I tweaked a little bit the last end of the year with my front foot. Now, like I said, I've never been afraid to tweak some things, but This one was real small for me, and it was just able to keep my hips from flying open, was something that was big for me. So I was able to handle some other pitches and not just like the fastball, really, you know. So there's definitely some mechanical things, but yeah, I got in there and it's like, here we go. You know, give everything I got. And you know, sure enough, I think that I finally figured out kind of more about who I am at the plate. And there was a time where I was cold. Obviously, I came back, you know, I got hurt twice. So that was always kind of tough challenge. It's always a challenge when you start feeling good and then you get hurt. So it was just a little bit of both, but probably 80% philosophical.
Let me jump here in here and ask a quick question, okay?
Yeah.
Minnesota Twins have the all-time record for most 30 home run players on their team in a single season, 5. They did it in 2019. I'm looking at this Blue Jays lineup, and I see some mashers in this lineup. So I think there's 6 on this roster. I'm going to give you a list of names. You just say yes or no, 30 home runs from this guy in 2023. Okay, real easy game here. We're going to start with George Springer, the leadoff man. Can he do 30 this year?
Yes.
That's an easy yes, right? Bo Bichette?
Yep.
Easy yes. Vladdy?
Give it.
you'll give him the nod.
I don't know. Yeah,
all
of
right.
course.
All right. Dalton Varsho, the new guy.
Yeah.
Matt Chapman.
27 last year. Varsho, 27. Yeah, he's got juice. Chapman, yes.
All right. Number 6, Danny Jansen.
Yes.
You knew that where this was coming, right? You knew this was.
Yes. Love it. Yes. Love it. That's a great list. No, that's elite company, and it's
right.
Yeah. That's a good list. You know, it's something that, you know, I'm not going up there and trying to hit homers, but I feel like I kind of freed myself up mentality. You know, my mentality kind of freed up with like, this is my approach. This is my swing. I don't need to tweak stuff. Like, I'm just going to try to, you know, make adjustments, you know, mentally. And then I started just kind of freeing myself up and getting the head out. That was my goal, you know, trying to get the head out.
Yeah, man. No need to be humble. You found some real pop in your bat in the last season and towards the end of the year before there. So
let's see what this.
Because you did touch on it here. And listen, you've always been a pretty good fastball hitter. And you talked about the philosophical change. And I could be out to lunch. It could be coincidence. But it did seem like you were just on the breaking ball a little bit more at the end of the season. There wouldn't be, because there were times at the beginning of the season where they were throwing that breaking ball for strike one there because you were sitting on the fastball, and it just seemed like you were more ready for that at the end of the season. Is that correct?
Yeah. I would say you're not out to lunch on that one. Okay. I would say, you know, I obviously as a catcher, you have this data, you have all the information, and you know, you call games certain ways, right? And I've at the plate, like I've tried to think with the guys, with the pitchers, you know, when I'm hitting, but you know, I definitely was always, you know, on the fastball, and that's something that I'm proud of. I'm proud of that approach. I feel like, you know, that's something that you definitely want to do, but I had to, like, you know, eat my pride a little bit and be like, all right, dig into the numbers for myself. It's like, I knew I wasn't performing on off speed. Yes, hear that?
Yeah. You got to go check
out with a new baby. It's always like, you're like, hey.
Yeah.
No, I think it's my wife's got it handled. But anyways, So there's definitely times where I definitely. All right, hold on.
This is fair. He can be a dad.
Let's go. All right. I can hear whatever. Everything good, Miles?
If it makes you feel any better, Danny, we had Robert DiBernardo on Tuesday, and Adam's dog started barking midway through the interview, and we got to watch him do the exact same thing. So,
yeah.
Two dogs and a baby. The house is moving. So, So I swallowed my pride. It's like, all right, well, I'm doing damage on fastballs, and I know that I'm going to get other stuff because I'm not succeeding on other pitches, right? So then Yeah, I was definitely still trying to stay on the heater, but I was definitely, you know, making some adjustments with what I'm looking for at the plate later in the year for sure. And having, you know, obviously with confidence, you can do that easier, you know, when you have confidence and you're feeling good at the plate. But once I figured out that, hey, like, it's not really, you know, my swing that's the issue. It's just like, it's getting out of my own way. I feel like you're able to, or I'm able to make that adjustment and sit on stuff, you know, much smoother.
The brain's such a funny thing with that. Like, just the idea that confidence really does can just change you as a complete person and the way you approach whatever you're going after. It's just, it's such a, such
yeah, an incredible, well, the, yeah. This game, man, this game is just, you know, obviously it's a game of failure, right? But I've always thought too, being a catcher, you can help the team win by going 0-for-4. That's always in the back of my mind too, right? That's mm-hmm. always a thing. So obviously, you know, I want to produce offensively as well. And I started to, you know, do that more, but that's the beauty of being a catcher as well.
Obviously, when it comes to sports, everyone's aware of the business of it, right? And you try not to take things personally and all of that. But despite that, the truth is, man, the speculation around the catching position in Toronto over the last 6 months has been, I'm sure, tough to ignore, even though you stay focused and, you know, you and Kirky and I'm sure Moreno were all just trying to stay in your lane and focus on your development and the team and stuff. There was a lot of talk. What do you do to try and stay on track? Well, stuff like that, the surrounding things are coming at you.
Yeah, it's, you know, I've actually removed Twitter a couple of years ago, and that was something that I just felt like, I don't want to really necessarily be on it because there's always stuff, you know, about, you know, it can be just how you perform that night or stuff that, you know, I didn't need. So, and then, you know, a time like this where there's always, you know, talks and trade talks and things like that. So, yeah, I did just try to stay level-headed and in my own lane. And you know, of course, there's people like, you know, who you hear about it from, like just, you know, friends or whatever it may be. Yeah. Right. So it's there, but, it's something that you really can't control. So I'm not going to try to, you know, really sweat it if I can't control it, right? Just kind of control what I can control. So I'm just continue to, you know, be the best dad I could be and
yeah,
try to get my body and everything in shape. And then obviously, you know, there's a move that happened.
And you do have new teammates this year. It is a very different looking Blue Jays squad as you head into 2023. How are you feeling about the moves? Obviously, it's tough to see old friends leave, but a lot of pretty major talent coming back your way. I know Dalton Varsho mentioned that you reached out to him. Have you talked to all the new additions?
Basically, yes. I like to reach out to him and just say what's up and welcome to the squad. So, yeah, man, it's always, you know, it's a business, right? And you got friends. I play with Teo and Gurriel for a long time in the minor leagues and in the big leagues for my whole career. So wish them nothing but the best. They're great dudes, great ball players. And then you welcome the guys in. And obviously it's always a revolving door with that kind of stuff. So so excited about it. You know, Varsho, yeah, he's another Wisconsinite because I grew up in Wisconsin. Played against each other, I believe, twice in high school, even back in the day. So that's going to be great. And, you know, playing against Kiermaier, just knowing what he can do. Chris Bassett, another guy who has a bunch of different pitches and he's a bulldog on the mound. So excited to work with him. Swanson. Don't think I faced him last year, but I know what he's capable of. He's obviously good at what he does and I hear nothing but great things about him. It's an exciting time. I'm looking forward to it.
When you have an outfield, obviously defense has improved. Nothing against the 2022 team. It just looks defensively pretty darn sound in that outfield. When you have a defensive outfield that's as rock solid as this, does it change your game calling behind the plate? It just feels like all fly balls are going to be outs this year. Do you approach it a little differently?
Not necessarily. I've always felt and had the confidence in the guys in the outfield years prior. So if they're, you know, it's not like it's going to be something where, or is ever a time where you hold your breath when something's in the outfield. Right. But, and it's always good to improve defense and to have guys that can do it out there. I don't know if that matters. I don't even know about because the shift's going to be gone for the most part. So I don't know how that affects the outfield shift. If you guys have any insight on that.
You can't have four outfielders out there anymore.
You can't have four. Okay. All right.
You can't
I didn't even know. Yeah. I got used to all these rule changes, you know?
All you knew was Danny Jansen is still not lining up in the outfield. That's all you needed to worry about.
That's okay. It. And maybe there's a couple more hits in that six hole too, maybe. not necessarily, but it's always good to have obviously solid defense and stuff like that. You know, it's always a huge piece.
With robo-umps coming into AAA in every game, I'm curious if your approach with the pitchers that are coming up and down, you know, the dudes who are yo-yoed up and down, they have options, and just for whatever reason, they're going to, if there's bad tacos, they're going to come up and look after it and then come back down.
Bad tacos. I remember that.
There you go. Yeah. Will you do things differently, being that the robot strike zone is going to be so different than when you're in the big leagues, or do you just try not and worry too much about that?
Yeah, that's obviously a huge change. And there's been times where I was rehabbing last year where I was dealing with that, and I was seeing it firsthand. My first rehab was in low A. It was in Dunedin, Florida. And there was like certain games where you could challenge it. And I don't think I was behind the plate, but I might've been DHing one game, which is very unique. And I've seen videos of it in like the fall league of that stuff happening. So it's very interesting. I mean, I'm a huge advocate of, I like kind of how it is now, you know what I'm saying? But, cause I think the receiving aspect of it is, you know, obviously a huge part of the game, part of.
I don't want to cut you off here, but let's talk about that for a second. Will robo-umps make framing irrelevant? Like,
I would assume so. Yeah.
Okay. Wow. That is so wild. Cause it's such a major part of catching now.
Yeah. I would assume it would, because you're taking away, I mean, it's really about if it hits the box. So you see games on TV, you watch games on TV and you see it clip the box, and that's, I believe that would be a strike, right? Or even like maybe it sometimes might even be like a huge Kershaw curveball where it clips hits the plate maybe. And you know what I mean? So,
yeah.
So unique. And if they do it, like, I'm sure, you know, they would figure some more stuff out about it before it's in the big league level. But as far as guys coming up and down and stuff like that with how you call and how you approach that, I mean, it's not at the big league level. So you wouldn't really think about it, right? You just try to handle what you got in front of you.
So we had Robert DiBernardo, head of the mental performance department, on Tuesday. The guy is a motivational genius, in my opinion. I mean, the guy just can speak all sorts of sports psychology. It's pretty cool. And I know that game two of the wild card came up, and he was talking about turning perceived failures into teachable moments and kind of building blocks for future wins.
Yeah.
And I know that throughout your career, and we touched on this already, but you've had some ups and downs and some obstacles to overcome yourself. How do you keep the greater goal in focus and still kind of stay cognizant of your own development?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I've talked about that game quite a bit, the game two of the wild card. And obviously, it's a tough one. And I don't think there was a time where we were like, you think back about it, you reflect on it this offseason, and it's like, man, we really weren't focused. You know, I think it was just a baseball, and you guys, you know baseball is nuts like that, and stuff happens. So yeah, it's something we're definitely, you know, a teachable moment where maybe just mentally with the roller coaster of the game, and we know that, but it was a tough one. But hey, you're going to build off it. It's not, obviously, we want to, you know, force the issue of game three and continue on and all that. So it's something that keeps us hungry and, you know, keeps us motivated to bring it back, you know, to Toronto again. That was a great experience of being there, first of all, of having the fans and always stuff that we heard about when we heard about how you could barely hear each other speak when you're right next to each other, because it's so loud in there, you know. But at the end of the day, it's all about winning, you know. So so you're going to keep, as myself, I'm going to keep developing, keep doing everything I can for myself, but it's going to translate to the team. It's going to be receiving, so I can get my guys more pitches. It's going to be game calling. It's going to be, I always think that, you know, the moment I think I have it all figured out, I'm going to get kicked out of the game. So I never want that to be the case. It's always going to be learning and developing. But at the end of the day, it's about winning. It's about helping the team win any way you can, you know.
On a more positive note, who's the funniest dude in the Blue Jays clubhouse? Is there a guy who has everyone laughing?
The funniest guy, I think somebody that would maybe go under the radar for this, but like Tim Mazza is a guy that Yeah, and you know, I've known Tim since we both signed together in 2013. I've came up with him, and he's, you know, the best guy, and he's always got jokes. He's got these dad jokes now, and he's one that comes to mind for sure. Trent Thornton, another one. You know, George Springer, Matt Chapman, these guys, they're all good people that I've known coming up and played with for a long time, but also that, you know, I've met recently and started playing with them recently. That clubhouse is awesome.
Hold on. You're telling me Matt Chapman has a sense of humor?
Oh yeah. He's got a great one. Yeah. You think not?
Oh, we just never see it. He's just so like stone faced and serious in the best way possible.
In the best way. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, and obviously he's a competitor. He's locked in, but he's a riot. He's funny.
I love to hear that. Did he open up more as the season went on in the clubhouse? Did you start to see his personality shine through a bit more?
I would think so. I would think anybody that comes to a new team, you know, you definitely want to find your bearings and meet the guys more, and you get more and more comfortable as the long season goes on. So yeah, maybe a little bit and stuff. Maybe the first half and then second half. But I mean, he's a rock solid guy. I can never say anything bad about him. He's a team leader, he's a competitor. He's obviously very, very talented, and it's a good time.
How about the biggest ball buster in the room? Is there someone who's, if someone's gonna get razzed, there's someone who's ready to give that zinger?
No, I don't know. I think that as much fun as this team has, we hold each other accountable as well. You know, and there's times where, which I think you need for sure, you know, and that's something that's very important, you know? So I wouldn't say, you know, really any of that, but, you know, it's a team of guys who are getting more and more experience, like myself included, and more and more professional at the level. And obviously, you know, you want to be as pro as it gets, and that's what this league's all about. So.
Danny, I would love to hear about your relationship with Alejandro Kirk, because catching is such an intensive position and there's so much going on. How much time do you two spend together just kind of going over each other's notes and game plans and stuff like that? Because my buddy brought up something that I thought was kind of a misperception of the catching position, and he just kind of envisioned it like the two catchers are a little adversarial because they're both fighting for playing time, but at no point did it feel or look that way with you and Kirky. What's your two dynamic like?
Yeah, it's a good one. I think that we both want to win, and you know obviously you want to be behind the plate, but what's most important is really winning. So we're talking to each other. We have obviously scouting report meetings, and we're taking notes. And we're doing everything because winning is the most important thing, you know, you know, it's always great. We're both our names are called and we're both in there and all that. So, no, I can't say enough good things about him. He's worked really hard and he's a very talented player. He's a talented hitter. And, you know, the strides that he's made behind the plate too have been huge. So good.
It was interesting last year. Really, you both were in the lineup almost every game when you were available. Like, it pretty much took bad tacos to take any of you out of the game. So
yeah, and hopefully no more bad tacos.
That's right. Okay, so you see pitchers up close and personal. Again, we're gonna get to listener questions in a second, but I had so many questions about this in particular, I figured I'd bring it up. I could honestly watch highlights of Gausman's splitter all day, and I know that there's a lot within the fan base who could. So the question is, how nasty is that pitch to catch?
Nasty. But he's good enough where he's got a feel of it, right? Like, I've caught splitters that, hey, it's sitting in the middle and this thing might be in the dirt, it might be knuckling, and there's splitters are unique because they're different. It's not like, which all pitches kind of are, but it's not like splitters all do the same thing, you know? And if Gauze is, it's the reason why it's, I think it's so good is his control of it. You know, it's honestly, if 3-2 bases loaded, he might call, you know, he might do a splitter, you know, and that's just how much confidence he has in it, but it's such a good pitch. It's got late bite. You know, obviously it's something where, you know, the first time catching it, it's like, all right, getting used to it a little bit, because I want to be able to block it and receive it at the same time. Cause it's one of those pitches where it's just got a late bite. You know, so you got to kind of stay on your toes, but I have a lot of confidence with him to pretty much kind of put it for the most part where he wants to.
I mean, Danny, you've been playing pro ball for years now. Can you look back on that career? Is there, how many times with a guy with a splitter are you calling the splitter 3-2?
I don't know, man. It's unique. Yeah.
So Gausman's a bit of a unicorn with that then, eh?
Yeah, I think a changeup's one thing where it's more easier to control in a way, but the splitter moves more, and it's something that it's just, he's got a lot of confidence in it. He could throw it for a strike, and he could throw it and strike the ball, you know? So it's one of those things too, where like a guy like Rue too, you know, like Rue, he definitely would feel comfortable throwing a 3-2 changeup because he's got, you know, impeccable feel with it. And that's definitely a feel pitch changeup, you know, and the splitter in some cases too. But sometimes in some cases where it's been like, this thing's going to be 92, it's going to bite like with other guys, and it's going to do kind of whatever it is. And so his is a little bit different, but it's a great pitch.
Speaking of pitchers that are maybe a little more tricky to receive, what's it like catching for Adam Simber and that trajectory on the upward angle as opposed to a more conventional arm?
Yeah, it's unique for sure. It's something where I think his sinker, because he throws it down and he throws it from a down slot and then it's moving down. It's something that you got to anticipate and be ready for. And there's, you know, definitely stuff that I want to work on personally with the low ball and stuff. And it's really going to benefit with a guy like him who's trying to throw that ball down. But then he also has the upshoot and the slider as well. He kind of throws it up and down. So it's unique. And it took a little bit of time with him, but it's fun to catch.
I always wonder that, because it would be so difficult to see the ball coming in with his arm slot in the batter's box, and of course it would be a little tricky to get used to as a catcher too. Like,
yeah, that's why he's so effective, right? It's tough to catch. It's got to be tough to hit. You know what I mean? So
Danny, we have a pile of listener questions. We're probably not going to get them all, so we'll switch to that after this next question. We'll end on this. If you were to give some advice to young catchers coming up in the game, what would you tell them?
Yeah, that's a good one. I mean, the position is so, I believe one of the most important things about a catcher is being prepared. And obviously at a major league level, you have more information and it's maybe different preparation, but I would think that just developing a routine, whether it be something before the game or something you kind of, you learn along the way, it might change. But like for me, I go to the bullpen early and I'm stretching and I'm taking my time early to kind of relax. And then I'll do my catching routine where it's receiving stuff, whatever drill you might like to kind of get you locked in. And then it's some blocking things. And it's something I do every single day. And it's such a long season. Obviously it's longer for us than, you know, for youth kids, but it's a very important job. And I think that the more you're prepared, the easier it is to go out there and compete behind the plate for sure.
So we are well aware that you have no obligation to come on a small time podcast like this, but we are so appreciative of your time, man. And thank you so very much. I'll toss over to Adam here and we'll get to listener questions.
Yeah, it's always a treat. Thanks for having me again.
All right. First one comes in from Australia, Phil. So he's been a long time Blue Jays fan. I think he's from Canada, lives in Australia now. Anyways, he says, Danny, tell your dad, Steve, that I'm heading back over to Toronto in April to catch the White Sox series for my birthday. I'm hoping he and I can meet up for another round of beers. He says your dad is a great bloke and a proud dad. So there you go.
Well, thank you. If anyone's met my dad, my dad is an extremely friendly guy and he loves the game of baseball and he loves, making relationships with anybody he might meet, you know? So that's great to hear that. And I'm sure he'd love it.
There you go. Awesome. Okay. Next one comes in from Bradley, who's wondering, hey Danny, love to see you on the walk-off again. Last year, Scott and Adam did a fun little home run versus saves race between Vladdy and Romano. Romano won the race, 36 saves to Vladdy's 32 home runs. He wants to know, who do you think wins that race this year? More Romano saves or Vladdy home runs? It's a tough one.
That is, I've never thought about that. That's great. obviously these guys are both elite at what they do. We want to see, how about we just say a tie at like 50?
All right. I like that. All right. Okay.
That works.
Mark it down.
Okay. Next one comes in from Ian, says with there now clearly only two main catchers in the mix. Of course, the wild card being Varsho, not included there. Is it easier to anticipate a more regular routine coming in terms of workload? And do you think it'll be a personal catcher and pitcher assignment, or more of just a rotational workload, maybe affected by days off and night day followed by day game?
Yeah, that's a good one. It's always something, because I feel like I've kind of been in this unique position with kind of like the, you know, the time sharing and getting in there and, you know, having a day or two. So it'd be great if, obviously, you know, we're both in there DH catching or whatever it may be and doing things. As far as the personal catcher, I think that, I mean, it's Manoah and Kirky are probably, you know, the ones for sure. That's there is going to be a personal. It's been like that for the last, you know, 2 years. It's always something though where I've really just, you know, whatever my name's called, I'm ready. So it's anticipating any day. I was anticipating to be in the lineup, and then when I am in the lineup, then I'm ready to go and prepared. So that's never going to change.
Awesome. Okay, next one comes in from Dan, wants to know, with all the new players that have been brought in, is there anyone in particular you look forward to hitting in front of or behind this year?
Interesting. Well, first of all, I feel like that nine-hole spot for me last year was pretty good. hitting in front of George, but...
Yeah, that worked out good.
It's something where you know, it doesn't really bother me where I am. I just, you know, being in there and helping the team any way I can. Let's just go ahead and say Varsho being behind two Wisconsinites going back to back, and
seeing
what we got.
All right. Speaking of Wisconsinite, this question came in, makes no sense to me. Maybe it'll make sense to you. Joshua wants to know, while living in Wisconsin, did you ever eat a wildcat sandwich? And I want to know, what is a wildcat sandwich? Is that a thing?
Can we look it up? I can't say that I have. Right, my first job was at Culver's, which is big in Wisconsin. I don't know if you guys heard or seen a Culver's.
Let's look it up here.
Frozen custard. Let's see what a wildcat sandwich is.
Okay, right. So it says, but whether you call it wildcat or cannibal sandwich, this Wisconsin public radio story explains that it's basically sirloin beef or steak that you grind up and spread on a cracker or piece of rye bread.
No raw meat crackers for you?
Oh, it's raw meat.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's raw, right. Usually raw, yeah.
Yeah, no, it's something I haven't had, but curious now a little bit.
All right, there you go. Next time you go back to Wisconsin, bring Dalton with you and you guys can have some raw meat snacks. No, yeah, trust me, this will be good, you can say.
Won't knock it till you try it, I guess. Yeah, so.
Fair enough. Okay, next one comes in from Jason Burnett. Says, first, having come up through the Jays as more of an offensive catcher, how do you feel about the improvements you've made to become a very good defensive catcher? And secondly, it seems like you've made a conscious effort to pull the ball and the results are amazing. Are you happy with both sides of your game?
Yeah, defense is, I guess coming up in the minor leagues, it's been like a roller coaster. I will say though, defense has always been the primary focus. I think it's a very important part of the game, and it's something I said earlier, where you can go for four and help the team win. And that's extremely important. So that's always going to be a main focus. There was times in the minor leagues, like when I got my glasses, I finally, you know, was producing offensively, which, you know, obviously seeing the ball.
Seeing the ball makes a big difference, right?
Yeah. I've had that tag, I guess, of both. I think earlier in my career, it was defensively in the big leagues. You know, of course, that mentality, though, that I have about defense is never going to change. But giving myself a little bit more time and finding out a little bit more, give myself more time to prepare offensively has definitely helped. And I look and plan on looking forward to that and improving that and, you know, continuing to go on that. But part two, yeah, for sure. I think pulling the ball is something that I've done really well. It's something that I'm looking to improve on, but also, I feel like it's a mentality thing for me when I'm looking to be aggressive and kind of get the head out. It's just like I'm more aggressive in general on pitches or maybe on my swing instead of trying to maybe see it and kind of, you know, flip it somewhere or use it all. Then I'm aggressive. So at least give myself a chance to put my A swing on. That's really what we want to do, you know.
Love it. Okay, last one here then, and we'll let you go. Appreciate your time as always. John Dick wants to know, Danny, could you please talk about the coming rule changes this year and specifically which one you see having the biggest impact, positive or negative, on your game personally?
Okay. So we got some changes coming, obviously. There's a couple of things. I'll talk about a couple of things. I think the shift for me personally, selfishly, I think maybe some more hits I've in that six hole. And obviously I understand the shift and I understand why we did it and why it happens against me and all these things. So that's something where I think, might benefit me a little bit, but, do we got the big bases coming as
big
well?
Bases, big bases, yeah. Coming.
Big,
yeah.
Big bases coming.
And restrictions start, on the pickoff move too.
You're going to start stealing some bases, Danny?
I don't know. I got my first one last year.
Yes,
first
you one. Did.
Yeah. And I tell you what, I got up from that slide and I was like, wow, finally. I think that's really not a bad one though. I think that could definitely help with injury prevention, have bigger bases, you know, think about it like that. The whole, like, you know, only have a couple, you know, you can always stop at your play. Like you can pick off or step off a certain amount of times. Is going to take some time to get used to, I think, which is going to be obviously more stolen base attempts and a lot more action on the bases. So we're just going to have to tune up this arm and get it moving and get it ready to roll from behind the plate. And then the last thing I was going to touch on was the clock, right? And I think that one, the fact that we have the pitch comm is huge for the clock. Now I got to understand more about when the clock's going to start, but if it was a clock with fingers, it would be a lot more challenging, especially with guys on base. You're doing multiple signs and you have to be on the exact page because you have a certain amount of time. But now we have a pitch comm, I have to figure out exactly when it starts because you're able to press the buttons and they can hear it, you know, walking around the mound. It's something where, you know, certain guys last year I would throw the ball to, like a guy like David Phelps would catch it, not even looking at me, and I'm pressing a button and he's shaking his head no, you know, and then he gets a sign and then he steps on the mound or on the rubber, you know. So but that's a unique one. It's, you know, high leverage situations, relievers that take their time a little bit more because it's high leverage, so that's something that's going to take some time to get used to for sure. So that's a big one.
It'll be more just of an adjustment though, eh? Like it shouldn't be a mega obstacle or what?
Yeah, I think it's adjustment for sure. I mean, what are you going to do, right? You just gotta have to adjust. And same thing with the pitch comm last year. You adjust to that. At first, I didn't really love it just because I feel a little bit old school. It's like it's always nice to have these different sequences and all that. But then, you know, you start doing the pitch comm and you know, you get the feedback from the pitchers. And you know, next thing you know, I'm liking it a lot too. And you can get creative with it. So it's something you just adapt and you move on and you compete. And go for the end goal, baby.
Was there ever a pitch comm malfunction where you had to just go back to old school?
A couple times. And certain guys there's, I think the biggest issue was sometimes the pitchers, I wouldn't say that there's maybe a couple times where they didn't have it in or they forget they have it. But so you have like Vladdy come over and give it. But most times, like, they'll all have it and you can't hear anything. And then it's stoppage of play. And then they're probably frustrated and it's like, all right. And then, you know, umpire is probably frustrated. So then, so it'd be like, Vladdy would always be the one that would just run over there and give him his, you know? But as far as, good thing is, I don't think I got crossed up last year, for the most part, which is always a nice part of the game, you know, not getting crossed up.
Difficult when, like, over in the wild card series, when it was so loud, were there times where it was tricky?
Yeah, that I believe so. And that was something where we're thinking about early in the year. It's like, we got to figure out this volume thing because they turn it all the way up in a regular season game in Toronto. You know, we had, you know, obviously a lot of fans and it was, you know, oftenly packed, but so yeah, that was something where I don't even remember if it was that You see a lot of guys go like this, right, with their glove. Mm-hmm. They're putting it over their ear because, like, Romano would do that all the time. You step off, put over his ear, hear it. So, yeah, but as far as me and Kirky, I remember, telling Kirk, you don't need – I didn't have that earpiece in at all. There's a time in spring training because catchers can have it in their ear, and you see guys have it, almost like these beats where, they're all the way inside, like a tube.
But then the hitter would hear it, right, or what?
So I was just rattled that – I didn't want that to even be a thought that they could. So I'll tell you what, one of the first games having it, I couldn't understand the buttons to turn the volume down. So I'm pressing a button. It's like slider. And I swear the guy in the box can hear it. So I'm trying to figure out how to combat this in the middle of this spring training game. I'm walking behind, by the umpire like this, pressing it, yeah. Putting my head away. So after that, I was I don't want that to be a thought in my head that they can hear it. So I took it out. I definitely took some time to study that thing, but for the most part, the buttons are all pretty similar. You just got to get used to it, you know? So there's times where I'm not even looking at it. My finger would just go to what I wanted. And yeah. So you got to kind of trust yourself a little bit and know that you did enough preparation to know you're not going to hit slider and think fastball. But it's
funny about worrying the hitter is hearing it. Cause even if the hitter's not, you're still in your own head, right? You're like, oh no.
Yeah. Yeah. It's and then the guy hits a homer. He's like, all right, well, you heard it. Yeah. You know what I mean? Or now it's my fault. Cause I have this thing in. So I just took it out and took all that away. So I didn't have that worry.
Oh, that's great. No, next time you just got to go to your pitcher and you got to say, hey, look, slider is going to mean fastball, and I'm going to crank the volume on this thing. We're going to make him think a slider's coming.
Can you imagine?
Oh no!
Oops. All right. Question
Danny.
About the just the approach with this new base, the bigger base path, and the restricted pickoff attempts. The anticipation from the rules committee is this will lead to more stolen base attempts. How does this change or is this going to have to be something that until the data comes in, it won't change anything perhaps? But when you go into your catcher's meeting or whatever with the coaches, I would have to assume you have a color coding system or something for guys that are likely to steal, right? You know, a guy has a reputation for being an aggressive base runner. Is that going to change right into the season where you had a guy who maybe before was in the yellow category of I don't know. And now with this new rule set, you're like, this guy's probably going to go. And does that change your preparation or is that even a thing? Yeah. Is that a factor in your game planning or is it all just reaction and situational?
Yeah, I'm sure that it's going to be a lot more yellow where it's maybe might go.
Yeah.
You know, there's definitely we have, you know, the info and you know who's gonna go and who guys that are really fast and they know they're gonna go. So you always have that. And then there's definitely stuff where it's like, okay, he's taking bags, you don't know, he might go if you give him if you're slow enough going. But there might be some people where you didn't even think really would go, but now they're going. So interesting to see how it works out. I mean, it's all gonna be the adapting to it. So I don't know. It's a good point.
Yeah,
it's going to be interesting.
I have to expect stolen base attempts at least are going to go up this year. And
yeah,
following that, the implementation of robo-umps and alleviating some of that pressure to frame a strike is probably going to be a welcome addition to a catcher who goes, I don't have to worry about framing a strike now. I know that guy's going and I can just work on trying to throw them out. Is that something that do you enjoy throwing down to two or
yeah,
is it a hassle?
No, I enjoy it. And there's been times where I've done it really well. Then you're kind of struggling. It's all trying to fine tune about, and I think with the preparation I did before the game on footwork and stuff, having that routine and evolving into that routine has helped me for sure. Yeah. So, I mean, I think that, it's something that there's definitely going to be more stolen base attempts. And when I will say though, when a guy steals, you're not worried about the pitch. That's how it is now. Even you're not going to frame it and go, you don't have enough time. Right. So as far as that point, I don't think that's really going to change.
I'm sure I saw some guys last year framing, hoping that was the third out of the inning and they weren't.
Oh yeah. Yeah. That's that part. Yes. Where, you know, you got a guy going and it's like too big of a jump. It's like, I can't get him. And then you just kind of try to get the pitch for sure. Mm-hmm. So that's a good point too. Interesting. It's all interesting. Intriguing.
Yeah. It's going to be a whole new sport pretty soon. Be interesting to see how this plays out. I don't know. I love seeing the throws down to two. I hope there's more base stealing attempts. I hope to see throwing guys out all the time. I don't know. I've been a big fan of home run stealing catches. I think there's nothing better in baseball than when one guy does something absolutely right and then someone else takes it away from him. So it's kind of the equivalent behind the plate. If a guy gets a good jump and you still throw him out, it's like,
yeah, it's a good feeling. And there might be some more robs, I guess, in the Rogers Center. I think they're doing some adjustments at the wall, right? So
yeah. Some of the walls are going to be higher. Some are lower. It should be interesting. The whole thing. 2023 is going to be fun.
Yeah. Yeah, it is.
All right, Danny, we'll wrap it up there. Again, huge thank you for all of your time. We really appreciate this and really enjoyed talking baseball with you, man. We're rooting for you in 2023. All the best, my dude.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to the Walk Off Podcast with Scott Belford and Adam Mack, with a new episode every Friday.
Osborne with a drive. Cheese and crackers. Chose to pitch to him. Wrong move.
Thanks for listening.